Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you doing today?
I'm good. We missed you last week.
Oh, that's nice. I missed you guys.
We did.
I was at jury duty.
How was jury duty?
I didn't get picked.
Did you act crazy?
Yeah, that's what you do, right? Don't pick me. No, it's kind of interesting. You know, it's kind of inefficient. You know,
it is.
It's like 300 people. They were pulling people in chunks of 60 people at a time. And then they did that two times. And then they go, well, just wait here. And I thought, like, when lunch rolled around, they're like, oh, they're going to cut everybody loose. And they're like, no, there's still one judge that hasn't decided yet.
Mm.
And then they asked for another 60 people. And then that was the end. They cut everybody else loose after that.
Interesting. Do they let you read? Because it's been...
Yeah.
Okay.
I had my Kindle.
Really? I guess you're in a hallway and kind of shuffled around.
You're in
lot.
A big room. It's like a big room, big empty room with chairs.
Oh, that's good.
Never been?
I've been once. I've gotten called a couple times, but yeah, I've been once, and it is an unusual system, but
yeah, and then
I guess it works.
But like, why couldn't they just communicate with the judge and say, okay, this is how many we need,
mm-hmm.
and then just ask for that, you know, plus or minus 20%?
It's a mystery. Yeah. Definitely a mystery. So another mystery. This morning I had eggs.
Oh.
Okay. Like
not your eggs?
Not my eggs. I was down in the cafeteria and I had eggs. I was just in the mood. And
they're not the same, Amy.
I had to put Tabasco on them. I had to put Tabasco sauce on the eggs. I realized, you know, my chickens, the eggs that I get, that I eat when they're an hour old, taste so
much
different.
Better. It's noticeable. It's definitely noticeable.
It was a texture. There was no taste to the eggs until I put the Tabasco on them.
Isn't that amazing?
It really is amazing. So that was my first out-of-the-house egg experience.
Wow, now you got to bring your own.
Bring my own eggs. That would go over well.
Excuse me, chef. Here's these are the eggs I would like you to use.
Yeah, I would like you to use Alice's eggs.
Right.
Oh, geez, that's goofy. Holiday season, lots going on. It's a great time of year. It's also a wonderful time of year to talk about those that have served our country. I'm excited about the show today, Lee.
Yeah, it's important.
Two incredible guests. We talk about veterans a lot, and I think one thing that we don't really think much about is how do they transition from life back into the corporate world? And I'm excited about our guests today. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We have Jason Jones. Welcome.
Thank you.
And I'm anxious to hear a little bit more about your company and what you're involved in with the Vet Loop and Battlefield to Business. And we also have this morning John Manganiello, and John's here to talk with us as well. He's from the studentveterans.org and has an incredible background. So welcome, y'all.
Thank you.
Good morning, Amy. Great to be here.
I think there's probably going to be no shortage of conversation between the two of them. So let's leave this as a roundtable. First of all, Jason, tell us a little bit about Vet Loop.
Sure. Well, in general, the concept was a good friend of mine who served in the Army. By the way, my background is Navy. I was a naval aviator for 8 years. I flew the A-6 Intruder. I was a bombardier navigator. That's from 91 to 99. And flew off the USS Enterprise.
Cool.
I have a heart for those who have also served. It's a natural affinity. And there's a good friend of mine who is an Army tank guy, served in Germany back in the 80s when the Iron Curtain was still up. His name is Scott Burkett. He's a local entrepreneur, fantastic person, and has great stories about Christmas Day snowball fights with East German soldiers where, you know, the wrong ice ball and it's Armageddon, right?
Oh, gosh.
But he and I were talking about how do we help those that we have a passion for, which is folks who are transitioning out of the military. And there's a lot of great groups that have been formed. In fact, there's really a surge of organizations that have been formed over the past year or two and are ongoing in their formation to help people who are veterans or transitioning or are currently active duty. And many of them are oriented towards people with injuries. And Wounded Warriors would be a common one that lots of folks have heard of. There are several different organizations. But we said, you know, one of the things that you don't hear is folks helping people, in the simplest terms, get a job. And when you transition out of a, you know, 4 or 5 years of service, or sometimes 20-plus years of service, it's a tough transition. So that was the basic fundamental concept of VetLoop is let's organize ourselves as veterans, people who have already been out and made the transition to the business world, to really take folks under our wing who are currently in active duty, coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, or just transitioning out from stateside duty stations, and let's help them find meaningful work.
Is this group, are you targeting mainly people that have a college education or people without, or both?
Both. It's really, it's across the spectrum. It's interesting, Scott and I bring two different backgrounds. I was an officer and I was airborne. I flew jets. Scott was an enlisted guy. He joined right after high school and he drove tanks.
Mm-hmm.
We want to help both, and we bring both of those perspectives to the organization. So anybody from a junior enlisted person who's just served 3 years to someone who's a flag officer, an admiral or a general, we're happy to connect them to people that we know in the business world.
And how does the battlefield to business kind of parallel the VetLoop?
Thank you. That's a great question. Battlefield to Business is a podcast that I developed about a year ago. That the concept there is interviewing senior seasoned business professionals who have spent time in the active forces, and let's talk about and discuss their insights into how that experience, how those principles and lessons learned on active duty are transferred to their civilian business processes. How does that further their success in the business world? And so it's a natural fit with VetLoop because that's what we're doing, is helping people transition. And these are people who have done it, and it's sort of a, you could point to it as a proof of the value that can be brought from the military to the civilian world.
Interesting. Now, over to you, John. Tell us a little bit about the SVA. What does that stand for, the Student Veterans Organization? Tell us a little bit about it.
Great, and thank you for having me here, Amy. What we do in conjunction to what Jason brings to the table is we're coming from the other side of the plate, where Student Veterans of America are exactly that, current undergraduate and graduate student veterans who have served in one capacity or the other. I actually started out as an enlisted private back in 99 in the Army as a military police officer, and then worked my way up to a team leader position, which at 19 years old, I thought it was pretty cool to have, responsibility for three other individuals. And really, I think that was one of my early accomplishments within the military. When I gained that position, I was identified by my commander to potentially go over to what we call the dark side, the officer side of the force, which is more of a supervisor role rather than a working role, mm-hmm. so to speak. At first, I was a little hesitant. I'll be quite honest. I was very happy with my current role. But again, I'm very, very looking back on it, very excited that they identified me and really promoted me into that capacity, at which time I went back to my home of Long Island, New York, where I earned a undergraduate degree from a small private school, Hofstra University. And immediately upon graduation from there, I was fortunate to get selected to join the Infantry Officer Corps, kind of the front edge of the battlefield, leading troops into combat, and came down here to Georgia, out to Fort Benning, and completed all the necessary training to include Ranger School, which was a phenomenal leadership crucible, and then actually had the privilege to deploy and lead troops into combat, both in East Baghdad and Ramadi twice. Over the past 4 years. Since then, I completed my military service with distinction last summer and reside here now in the Atlanta area, where I'm currently pursuing my MBA at Georgia State University. And what we're trying to do here with Student Veterans of America, which is a nationwide organization headquartered in D.C., with over 240 chapters throughout the U.S., is really bring those student veterans, both undergraduate and graduate, into the fold of networking with business professionals, because at the end of the day, when those veterans do complete their schooling, whatever it may be, I think jobs, just like Jason has said, is one of the most important and critical factors into ensuring their continued success beyond the military. So whereas some of the other VSOs, veteran service organizations, which Jason has mentioned, you have the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, mm-hmm. and then some of the newer ones, the Wounded Warriors, and all the other ones that have really popped up in the surge of patriotism since 9/11. we're very unique in that we identify student veterans, get them connected to other student veterans, because at the end of the day, when you're at a school like Georgia State University, which has about 25,000 plus students, both at the main campus and at other satellite campuses throughout the Atlanta area, sometimes those student veterans bring unique skill sets to the table, but also maybe feel more comfortable in a classroom setting if they know there's a fellow individual who might not have done exactly what they did, but served in some capacity, and they have those common stories that they can share. And then again, with this post-9/11 GI Bill that was just passed by President Obama over the summer, the VA Veterans Affairs is very much involved in helping the current generation of Operation Iraqi Freedom, which I'm a veteran of, and also our Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan veterans, really make that transition from the battlefield to the boardroom, which, again, we're trying to work with Jason and some other phenomenal organizations here in the Atlanta area to connect those junior student veterans who are, you know, just starting their careers, really excited, really motivated, bring unique skill sets to the table, and link them up with senior professionals who themselves might be veterans, and working together to really provide that leadership for corporate America for the next 20 to 30 years.
Sure. You know, Lee and I see a lot of groups come through here, a lot of different types of networking groups. It seems in the Atlanta business community in particular, there are a lot of different pockets, and folks gather together to network. I can't think of a better network and folks that would have more in common than, you know, veterans, really. I mean, people that have served their country, and that what an incredible commonality that is so ingrained in who they are and in their life and in their world. Coming from the student perspective, what are some of the things that the Atlanta business community has embraced as far as your organization?
From the get-go, we're the national organization is only about 5 years old. And here in Georgia, I just took over the leadership role of a state director about 8 months ago. So it's been a new experience just for myself, in addition to school and work and family and other obligations I have in the community. But I'll be quite honest, where when I approach people and just talk to them for the first time, especially some senior level individuals, there's those connections immediately that, hey, I was a veteran in either Persian Gulf, Vietnam, or during the interwar years. Here you are 20 years later, and it's interesting where once we have a cup of coffee or get to know each other, we have the same stories. Mm-hmm. Theirs might be from Southwest Asia or Southeast Asia, and mine are from Southwest Asia, but the general commonalities come to rise. And again, Jason and I were just at a clay shooting event up in Northwest Georgia a few weeks ago.
And that's one of Amy's favorite things.
That's one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah. Should have had you there. We could have used you.
Yeah. Where'd y'all go? Where did you guys go? Was it private?
It was at Barnsley Gardens.
Thank you.
Oh, that's an Orvis course, too. I love that one.
Spectacular.
Yeah. If the weather's good, too. Oh, mm-hmm. man. All right. But continue.
I'll be quite honest in the competition of the sport. Our team, which Jason and I were on the same one, we looked good doing it despite what our numbers put up, but we, at the end of the day, we had a really fun time. But what I was trying to get at is the community that was there was it was sponsored by a few major firms here in the Atlanta area, but I would say about a good 60 to 70% of the participants themselves were veterans in one way or the other, who are now working at some of the major financial firms in the area. So again, for me especially, as a junior guy, you know, just starting my network here in Atlanta and really looking for some new opportunities and to do some great things, to meet with Jason and some other senior level individuals from firms all over Atlanta in a non-traditional setting where, you know, once firearms are involved, the training kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a great time all day. And
and that's what this is really all about, is it's veterans helping each other, but it's also you know, veterans helping for both of our organizations, those who are still serving and that are on their way out. Because another part of VetLoop is we're not only trying to help them find meaningful work, we're also trying to help them make the right decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And the right decision may be get an education first. And you need to go talk to John and talk about, you know, what programs are available, what type of benefits are available to you from your time in service, the GI Bill, what are the specifics of that. So we really want to do everything we can to help facilitate both organizations for folks to get trained, get educated, make the right decisions, and be successful. And they have all the raw skills to do it.
Now, what are some of the missteps that veterans make when they get out?
I think one of the biggest things is not seeking the help that's available to them.
So there's a lot of resources that they're just not tapping?
it's not that there's a lot of resources that they're not tapping as in organizational form. That's why we're forming VetLoop, because we want to create a mentoring program.
But is it to help them navigate through the various organizations, or is it just to navigate life kind of thing?
Well, I think the resource that sometimes people miss is they don't pick up the phone and really do a good job of understanding how networks and relationships help you find jobs. Mm-hmm. See, we were in the armed forces. We were in the working in the government. There wasn't as much of a need for building relationships among, across
the broad
spectrum.
It's built in, right.
And there's a fairly clear career path.
Sure.
That's all different.
But what happens like your day, your last day in the military? What is that like? Like, is there any support given to you from the military, or you're kind of like, thanks, bye, see you later?
It's come around a lot. I myself successfully transitioned out almost 16 months to the day.
Mm-hmm.
And what the Army has identified, and I'm sure all the armed forces follow this service model as well, is they identify once you make the decision, which once you commit anywhere from 4 to 6 years of your life, probably some of your most productive and funnest years, late teens and early 20s, to the military and really get some positive experience out of it. And you make that decision, which is a very profound decision to, carry on that success outside of the military, which is all that really up till now in your career. Is the Army does a fairly decent job, much better than they did probably 10 or 20 years ago, of helping to helping to set you up for success outside.
Right.
But again, as Jason alluded to, it is the Army itself is 1.2 million individuals. That would be a very large company if it was a commercial entity. And just like anything, it's a one size fits all kind of thing.
So
me being an officer, I was very fortunate in that my undergraduate degree was in business management. So although I knew what I was going to do outside of college, I kind of had that training in business relationships and mentoring and some other
things. So you
knew
that was important.
I did personally. Now, some of my peers, other officers, and then even a lot of the enlisted individuals, really that two-week program it's a lockstep program. I'll be honest, I learned a few good things in it, but in reality, I pretty much already made my timeline. I started my networking, but just like Jason said, coming out last August, I knew maybe five people in Atlanta, if that. And I was successful in landing a job right away, and it's been a very, very phenomenal track since then as far as working, MBA, and some other things that have risen since then. But since then, through Student Veterans and Jason, and now understanding the power of networking both within the government and outside the government, I probably expanded my network to easily over 150 to 200 good solid contacts.
Right, because you worked at it.
Correct. And I learned that very quickly. Once you hang up that uniform on a Friday and put on the Brooks Brothers on a Monday, just like Jason said, it's what you do and it's your success. And obviously that's some of the skill sets a military veteran brings to the table, no matter what organization it is, big or small. But learning that, I used to call it civilian side, but now I call it more the corporate side of things, where networking, relationships, I think really, especially in today's day and age with the current economic state, and then as a recovery comes around, that networking is really what's going to set you up for success, as opposed to your last rating, your last evaluation, and then identifying you for the next job within the military.
Yeah. That's got to be so difficult, though. Like you said, hanging up the uniform on Friday and putting on the suit on Monday. Do people usually take a period of time off? That transition's got to be unbelievably difficult.
It is very difficult, particularly when you go from operating a $30 million jet, flying over enemy territory, and responsible for multi-plane strikes, to now you're a freshman again. You're not nobody, but you're kind of nobody.
Right. Well, those skills aren't translating.
There's
to
no need for a bombardier navigator in the civilian sector, unfortunately.
Right. You don't use that a lot, right?
Not a whole lot.
Right.
So when I got, just to give you an idea of the difficulty of the transition, how we want to try to help, I got out and I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up.
Mm.
Now, I'd gotten an MBA. That was part of what I did after I got out, just like John is doing. It's a good logical next step. But then, it's still hard to figure out. We want to help people. Maybe we provide them with these psychological tests to figure out what you're best suited for.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it. But then you also, I spoke with 90 different people when I was searching for my job that I ultimately landed in corporate real estate. And those were lunches, breakfasts, coffees, And it started with one or two key people that said, I'm going to try to help you out because I said, look, I just got out of the Navy and I'm trying to break into your industry. I'd like to learn a little bit more about it to make sure I make the right next step. And they said, sure, I'll come meet you. And then he introduces me to five people, and those five people introduced me to five people. But I had to keep getting up every day and making the calls and pushing forward. And, by the way, this was 2002, not the best economy, similar to what we're in now. Nobody was hiring in real estate just like now. But I ultimately found a job. And that's what we can do is we can come together and open up our Rolodex, provide informational interviews, provide – you know, sometimes people need very simple things. And this is, goes all the way from the junior enlisted guy who gets out to the colonel who gets out. They haven't worn a suit in 20 years. And they put it on, and it doesn't really fit, and they don't realize that it doesn't fit. And they go in for an interview, and they need some basic help of how to interview, the resume, their how to dress. Scott Burkett, my founder, tells a great story about his job search that I'll let him tell for another day. But basically, he had some of his Army clothes that he cobbled together along with some old civilian clothes and showed up that way for his interview. And he landed the job through persistence because he's really bright. But we all could use a little help.
Absolutely. And talk about help. If you're a corporation, what are some of the attributes that a military person brings to a civilian employer? Because I can tell you the folks I know in through business – that are veterans. I know one thing, I should never be late. I just know that there's no chance that the appointment's not happening. I mean, they'd have to be like in the hospital.
I would say there's a couple of things that sort of go across. We're all individuals and we're all different. We have our own personalities and we're not automatons. You know, it's not like that. The military is a place for creativity and initiative. And that's some of the good stuff. People don't really realize that. But one of the key words people associate with the military, which is true, which gets ingrained in people, at least to some degree in some aspect, is discipline. So when you hire someone out of the military, generally speaking, we all have we have some discipline cases, but generally speaking, you're going to get someone who is mission-focused and disciplined about achieving the mission. Okay? The other thing is I saw a three-star general interviewed in the Atlanta Business Chronicle. This was many years ago. And he was asked the same question. He said, this is an easy answer. There's three things. There's three qualities that are across the spectrum, universal to people coming out of the military. Number one is they have a tremendous work ethic. They're very hard workers. Number two is they're extremely loyal. That's something that gets ingrained because you're a part of something that's greater than you. And you really build loyalty among each other and to you, the people who are senior to you and the people who are junior to you. That gets ingrained very early. So tremendous work ethic. They're extremely loyal. And I think this is one of the key differentiators, is that at a very early age, early in someone's career, you understand personal responsibility. You are held accountable for lots of people, very expensive things that can break things and kill people very early in your career. And you've got to be accountable for making sure you operate effectively and to the best of your ability and safely. So that's my two cents.
And tying in on that, I think one thing from the private all the way up to the general is leadership. You know, one thing I learned very early on as both a private and then also as an officer is the leadership aspect of, you know, it might not necessarily be in your job title at the time, but if you display some sort of leadership, whether it's a primary or secondary role, I think it comes through. And the one place that really taught me that, and, you know, I carry it through to this day, is at Ranger School. Everybody is both a leader and a follower. And what I mean by that is throughout the course of the three-month program, where it is very physically, emotionally, and mentally draining, you're put in situations that are probably as close to combat as possible without actually getting shot at. But what they do, why they do that as far as leadership training, especially for the infantry officers and infantry enlisted members who go through there, is it's always better to sweat in training than to bleed in combat. And it sounds very, you know, realistic and very surreal, which it is. But, you know, graduating Ranger School, I felt that I really could do anything that I put my mind to. And I proved it over the past 3 months in West Georgia, the North Georgia Mountains, and the swamps of Florida. So it really set me up for success where I left Ranger School and a week later I was in East Baghdad at 25 years old and I was responsible for 40 plus individuals operating combat patrols on day in and day out. Now I know, you know, here in the Atlanta business community, I won't probably be doing that anytime soon, but the aspects of planning, operations, and then also leading from the front very much do carry through from a combat patrol to a PowerPoint presentation, if that.
Now, Jason, when you're dealing with businesses, I know you're targeting a lot of the people you deal with are people that are veterans, but are you getting any, are you being embraced by people that aren't veterans?
You know, that is something. We're a fairly new organization, and that is one of the key items on the table for us, is how do we engage the community of people who have not served mm-hmm. on active duty? Because there are a whole lot of people out there that want to pitch in and want to help out. So we haven't quite figured out exactly how we're going to do that, but that is on the table for what we want to do.
I would imagine as well, just programs put in place to help folks manage veterans, because I think the mindset, like from a sales perspective and a management perspective, I don't know how I would manage that person. I mean, I think you've got a whole subset there. If you're talking about the civilians, you could help them understand the mindset. Because I've got a feeling that, like you were saying, if you put your mind to something, you can achieve it. That's amazing. I mean, it would be hard to manage, I think, and understand. So that might be.
Yeah, that could be. Somehow it works out. I mean, there's a lot of people that come out of the military and they get hired. And I think the best thing somebody could do if they're curious about that is you talk to folks who have hired people who came out of the military and see how – and like I said, not everybody is the same. You know,
right.
We're all individuals. So some people are require different management styles. So
so now can you share a little bit about the day-to-day of VetLoop? Like what – if I'm a veteran, is there meetings? Is this something that I engage with you guys and then I get kind of one-on-one counseling? What's my experience?
Right now we're having monthly meetings. Where we have a speaker will come in and talk primarily about topics related to business. But the goal and what's being developed is really the mentoring program. And
So do you match them up with other veterans? Like how does the mentoring work?
No, well, like I said, it's being developed.
Uh-huh.
But the concept is we would have someone who is a veteran advisor, let's call them, or a veteran mentor, paired up with someone who is just getting very close to transitioning out, or someone who is coming out of school,
right?
Who is a veteran and is a part of John's program,
right?
So that would be the one-to-one relationship. You know, and that's what you really need for an organization to be vibrant. Is you need active involvement of its members,
right?
Not just showing up in a meeting once a month and saying hello. That's a lot of fun, and that's part of it. That's the camaraderie that we share, but we really want to make it meaningful for the members and the people who are being
right.
helped.
Do you have any stories yet of people who you've helped?
Not yet, no. We're, like I said, we're a very young organization.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking months old versus many months or years.
Right.
So it's in the works.
We need to have Jason on again soon. And
right.
Maybe a year
and
from
bring
now.
And bring that guy or woman that he's helped.
Absolutely. I would love to know just – Lee asked about stories. Our listeners love stories. I love stories. I'd love to have for each of you to share maybe a story with us of something that happened to you while you were in active service and how that might have given you courage or given you the mindset to deal with something in your world today. Any thoughts on that? I'm putting you on the spot, I know. But something tells me both of you have lots of stories.
I'm sure we do, but when you get into the veteran community, I think it's something where I currently live, north of the city, there's actually an individual who is a Vietnam veteran, a ranger as well. And when the way we first met is on our cars, we each have a decal that, you know, identifies us as rangers, which is very, you know, it's a lot of pride. It takes a lot to earn that. And it was one of those things where I saw him in a parking lot. He saw me, and we just started talking. And we were talking a lot, and it's one of those things where we opened up right away. I would be honest where I've kind of followed the ethos where until I really know you, I don't talk too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do, which is, you know, how they cope with what they went through.
Sure.
But a very positive story I have was actually from my first deployment as a junior second lieutenant, brand new officer, leading troops into combat. Had my platoon of 42 individuals, 39 of which were actually in the original invasion in Iraq with the 3rd Infantry Division. So here I am, you know, I'm the guy in charge, but I also, with my enlisted background, knew the informal chain of command, and it really helped me to kind of turn this unit, which was already a great unit, into an excellent unit.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were in East Baghdad for about 10 months, And it was during the elections, if people remember back in 06, the Purple Fingers and, right. you know, really that idea of promise where mm-hmm. we were about 3 years into the war. And obviously there was a different national sentiment than it was today. It wasn't so much of a grind as I believe it's going towards that way. But still, even today, there's great things that are being done. Well, you know, besides all the missions and all the, you know, stuff I signed up for to be an infantry officer, one of the best accomplishments that walking away from that deployment really kind of brings a smile to my face to this day is within East Baghdad, people don't realize, but Baghdad is probably comparable to Atlanta in both size and scale and scope, mm-hmm. where you have four-lane highways, you have high-rise buildings. Obviously, just like Atlanta, there's nicer parts and not-so-nice parts. Right. Well, out on the edge, what Saddam did was anybody Saddam didn't like, he kind of pushed towards the periphery of the city.
To the suburbs.
Very much mm-hmm. so. And not to equate it to Buckhead and other areas, but you have literally mansions in central Baghdad that, you know, probably belonged in Buckhead and or Southern California uh-huh. with Mercedes and other vehicles there owned by Iraqi nationals, whereas on the periphery, there were literally mud huts and no running water. And that was, you know, we had both areas of responsibility. And obviously, some days we'd like going to others versus mm-hmm. the sure. others. But what we did was we identified a need from those, you know, tier two and tier three citizens who really wanted to have some basic services. And what we did was, again, me being a junior platoon leader and my company commander, who is my officer above me, put together this aid package basically on our own with the support of some supporting units and actually brought in some services such as running water and gasoline generators, which, you know, I would say I think went far and beyond what we would do at night as far as rounding up the bad guys, just bringing in maybe $200,000 or $300,000 mm-hmm. worth of equipment that could help improve these people's lives. They were grateful right. for us till the end. Now, it's been 3 years since then, so I don't know what's changed since then. But again, leaving Iraq for my first deployment to come home really kind of made me feel accomplished. And then on my second deployment, I had similar experiences on a more strategic scale.
But now that community building is becoming, you know, kind of the focus of what's happening.
It is. And again, this was back in 06. So it was before the surge. It was before General Petraeus right. came in and changed strategy dramatically. And I'm not saying we were the first ones to do it. It just within our little area right. of a big theater of operations for what our 40 guys did,
right,
I think mm-hmm. definitely did great things wow. for the population even after we left.
Right.
Made
That's
a big
great.
Difference. How about you, Jason?
The story that I could tell that would have things that I think are important for the private sector for my job today, I think there's a lot of things that come out of the story. It would be integrity and courage and contingency planning, prior preparation. And I'll try to make this brief. We were flying in the Persian Gulf. This was Operation Southern Watch, which is just patrol missions over the south of Iraq. This is 1996. And we had flown a very long mission patrolling southern Iraq. We came back to land on the carrier, and when we dropped our landing gear, we heard this loud smack pop. And
that's never good, right?
No, that's not a good. That's not a good sound. Not a normal sound. It's not a good sound. Well, to make a long story short, the A6 Intruder, like many aircraft, has three wheels. Okay, the nose wheel did not come down. And what happened was there's a metal actuator arm that just snapped. It was metal fatigue. It just broke. Nobody did anything wrong. It wasn't anybody's fault. It just broke. And we were not going to be able to land normally on the carrier. So this is a bad situation because we're out in the middle of the Persian Gulf and we're running out of gas and we don't have enough gas to get to land. So our options are either eject or take what's called a barricade. Do a barricade landing. That's where they rig what looks like a tennis net on the carrier, and you fly into it, and that's what stops you versus the cable that normally stops you.
Wow.
And we flew around. We had live bombs. We had to figure out how to get those off. They wouldn't come off, and then eventually we were able to get them off with some emergency procedures. We came and landed, and I will tell you, it's an interesting sight to look at the aircraft carrier and see a bunch of foam that they had blown on the landing area for your fireball. But the good news is we landed, and we actually did catch the arresting wire, which slowed us down, you know, immediately start to slow down, and that's all it took to put the nose gear down. It just didn't have that metal arm to push it forward.
All the way.
So anyways, it popped forward. We landed, right. You know, the nose gear came
happy
down,
ending, right.
And we flew into the net, happy ending. Okay, that's the beginning of the story, just to kind of set the stage for the next one. About a week later, I was taking off on a night mission over Iraq, and our chief operations officer, actually the chief maintenance officer for the squadron, who's also an aviator, came up to me and said, "Hey, Jason, I wanted you to know I just flew the jet you're about to fly, and when we dropped the landing gear, nothing happened."
Oh, no. Oh, but, no.
But, just want to give you the heads up.
But that's not good.
No.
Right. Here's the keys. At least, bye. Have a nice day.
At least he made it back safe.
Yes.
Somehow. So he said, but all I did was I lifted it up and then lowered it again, and it came down no problem. So it's probably just a solenoid issue, a little electrical glitch. Shouldn't be a problem.
Right.
Oh, geez.
Just jiggle it.
This
jiggle
was
it.
Stand on one foot. Close one eye.
This was a dumb idea to go flying that night.
Oh.
But the thing is, you get really caught up in the tempo of operations. And
because are you flying every day?
Flying every day.
Right.
And it's just, there's all kinds of curveballs that get
right.
thrown at you. And
so
you just
this
deal
is just
with
another
them.
One.
That's
right.
part of the ethos is mm-hmm. I can handle it. We can hack
right.
it. And it's sometimes hard to pull back and say, what is the wise decision here? There's
right.
danger, Will Robinson.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so we went flying. And
so does the whole crew know this or just you?
Oh, no. It's only two people, and we both knew.
Okay.
Oh.
We both knew. And we flew. It was a very dark night, very scary.
Mm-hmm.
And we came back to land, and
lowered
the landing gear, and nothing happened.
No.
And so it didn't feel very comfortable, but I said, hey, why don't we, you know, just cycle the landing gear and I'm
do it
sure
again.
It. So
right.
Lift it up, lower down, nothing. Crickets.
Oh, no.
Wow. And so I thought, oh, my goodness. You know, just a week ago, I took a barricade landing.
Right.
Oh, it's one of the most rare things to happen in
so now aviation. Are people looking at you going, that Jason.
Not
things
sure
a lot of bad things happen when he's in the plane.
Well, like I said, the barricade, that's a very, very rare. I mean, that was the first one in 7 years Navy-wide.
Wow.
And now all of a sudden I'm looking at number two within a week.
Wow.
And so we're flying around, and here's where the integrity, courage, and prior preparation and everything come into play is I knew that I had to fess up and tell the controllers that we had had this problem so that they could do some troubleshooting and help us figure out how we might solve this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just never know what's going to help. And they want every piece of information possible
right.
to help you help yourself get the jet
right.
landed safely. And so I had to fess up and say, well, you know, we knew that there might be a solenoid issue. Well, unfortunately, what happened was we were flying around at this point with the landing gear down, but, you know, the landing gear had not come
mm-hmm.
up. Or,
right.
Excuse me, had not gone down. It was still up. And about, I mean, it must have been 30 seconds. I mean, it might have been longer, but it felt like it was just right after I said that. Out of nowhere, the landing gear came down. It just happened. You know,
right.
the glitch. So we had to land, and I had to go talk to the commanding officer, and it was not a fun situation. But I knew that it was the right thing to do, and that's just one of those things that you take with you everywhere you go. You
right.
learn those situations.
So did you get in trouble?
Well, let's put it this way. There wasn't as much left of my backside after that conversation with the commanding officer.
But it's a good life. That's a good parenting lesson.
Absolutely.
Which, because, sometimes I have to tell my kids, it's like, look, you know, you take your medicine, then you learn from it, and
yeah.
then you move on.
Well,
exactly.
Also, one of the key things about it was my commanding officer was also, and this is part of the courage thing and the integrity, is he was also a little upset that I had fessed up when I did. And I told my pilot later, I said, let me tell you something. If we had had a Class A mishap, if we had had to eject, or we took another barricade, and this time with all the landing gear up and
right.
we nosed in, and then later it came out.
Or that you knew
right.
that
I knew this problem and I didn't say anything about it.
When would
absolutely.
Have been a good time?
Think of the hell to pay then.
Right.
Right.
So that's what was took a lot of courage.
That's a huge, huge lesson. We are so out of time, Lee.
Yeah.
I could listen all day, but I do have to ask one more question because I'm just curious. What, like when people sent you packages over the holidays, what was like the one thing that you got really excited to receive? I just
Silly string.
Silly
that was probably one of the funnest things. Well, there's candy and everything else. But so, yeah, because, you know, you're always cutting up on the aircraft carrier and among in the squadron. And so, you know, a little gag stuff like that was a lot of fun.
Who would think?
And then on the ground right there in East Baghdad and also Ramadi, you're dealing with, even in December, you know, not to exaggerate, but 90 to 100 degree heat plus whatever sitting inside the vehicle. So cookies and cakes, if they got there in one piece, that was always nice. But really, foot powder. For us. I mean, it goes back. I mean, it goes back to like World War I and World War II in Vietnam, where foot powder, especially for what we affectionately call ourselves ground pounders, definitely, you know, a warm, dry pair of socks, no matter where you are in the world.
That's appreciated.
Very much so. Although the cookies and cake were also nice.
Yeah, they don't hurt.
They don't hurt.
Cookies, cake, foot powder, and silly string.
Got it.
Merry Christmas, y'all. And
thanks
so much for being with us. Hope you have a wonderful holiday season.
Why don't we give them their website,
what you're doing.
The websites?
Yeah, give the websites. That's a great idea.
Vetloop and Battlefield of Business are simple. Vetloop is just that, vetloop.com. And the podcast, Battlefield of Business, is battlefield2business.com.
I got to check that out because something tells me there's a lot of great interviews and stories and a lot of
great stories come out.
Wow, that's wonderful. And how about you, John?
And then as far as Student Veterans of America, we have a nationwide website. But for here in the Atlanta area, you could go to www.studentveterans.org/Georgia State. Or check us out on Facebook, which we're at the Georgia State University - Student Veterans Association group website.
Terrific. Cool. Wonderful. Y'all, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
And next week we don't have a show.
Right, this is it for the year, right?
I've got a birthday next week. I'm taking the day off.
All right, they'll have to deal with best of
Atlanta Business Radio Show 2009. Tune in, and until next year, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show.